It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright, so, see, I'm coming up much bigger this time. So, this morning, we're leaving the house, and Trish says, hey, it's trash day. Which is good, because I had not remembered that. And so I was like, oh yeah. And then she proceeds to ask, basically, if there's any trash in the house that I need to, like, take out to the trash can before I take it to the curb. But the way she asks this is she says, do you have the trash you want? So I pause and think about it for a second and say, no, but I have the trash I deserve. And I've been telling everybody that joke today. I'm pretty proud of that joke.
That's a good one.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world available in the following formats: original, cherry flavored, chocolate covered, extended, Japanese overdub with German subtitles, ribbed, with beans, without beans, and dubstep remix.
Which is a pretty impressive list, considering it used to be just regular and chunky style.
Pretty much, yeah. And
that was it for a long time.
Nobody bought chunky style, so we discontinued that real fast.
We stopped selling that, and then we didn't do anything for a long time.
Yeah.
And now we have this impressive list of options
that
people love options.
Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 259. Do you know that this year is going to be the first year since we started that we're going to have a podcast on St. Patrick's Day?
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Also, right, I listened to our 50th episode earlier before I came over. I don't know what possessed me to do that.
50 specifically, yeah.
But our 50th episode, that's the episode where you had just met Dave Avid.
Oh, yeah.
And you talked about that. What else?
No, really? I had just met him back then? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, GammaCon.
Wow.
That's just the previous weekend, see? Because
I did originally meet him at a GammaCon, so the story checks out.
The 50th episode was on the 23rd of February. Let's see, what else? There seemed like there were a few other things that I noticed about the episode.
I feel like by 50 we had our jam down.
It was a pretty good episode, really. Oh, I announced publishing my third book.
Wow.
4 years ago.
Whew. Dang.
What?
Long ass time ago.
It seems like a long time ago.
Well, and especially with the milestones. If you say 4 years ago, I'm like, yeah. If you said that's when you met Dave Avid and that's when I published my third book, I'm like, those things happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
I have known Dave for a long time, and you published your books a long time ago.
Well, that's why I sent you that that YouTube video earlier, because you mentioned it in that podcast.
In that one. Yeah, you sent me the chicken one. It is a good film.
Yeah. You mentioned another film, too. I didn't look it up, but
yeah, there were a whole bunch. It was all the Oscar shows. I do remember that was possibly the last time we actually got to watch it in the Bijou, because the Bijou still existed.
Oh, also, that was the podcast after the podcast where you told your farm joke. So the 50th was the one with the meme on it about the couple thousand acres.
hey girl. yeah.
Good time.
For those of you just joining us,
go back and listen to
Yeah, that's what we 50. Did 209 episodes
it
ago.
It was a pretty good episode.
Here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, like you, maybe, please, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little things, little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. And the hat, all on its own, magically, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its Ezzy petting servants, draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except that's very little of the show.
Yeah.
But that's the only part for which we have an excuse. So, how's your week been?
That's okay. Nothing really to... I can't think of anything interesting to talk about, I guess. Just working on stuff. What about you?
A lot of Fallout 4.
Yeah?
I'm over 100 hours now. I believe I'm level 47. Mm. Just finished all the Pikmin stuff, which was messed up. And then looking up stuff on it later this morning, I was like, crap, because there was both a bobblehead and a comic down there. So I had to get back down there, which is not super easy to do.
No.
Just before you came over, I went and did that. So I'm just playing a ton of that. And not a lot else. I've seen two movies that I wish to speak of.
Okay.
One is, on Saturday, I went and saw Zoolander 2 with Coffee.
Oh.
Because Coffee kind of loves Zoolander.
Okay.
I do not like Zoolander, but Trish hates Zoolander, and Coffee's wife hates Zoolander.
Okay.
And so, a while back, when I figured out it was coming out, I asked her, I was like, when are you going to go see Zoolander 2? She's like, probably going to have to wait till it's on Netflix, because my wife won't go. And I was like, I don't hate it so bad. I I'll go with you, just so you don't have to wait, you know, a year or whatever. So we went. Did you ever see the first one?
I believe I did, yeah.
And?
Not my kind of thing. I mean, it wasn't terrible or anything, it's just... I have absolutely no interest in seeing the second one.
Yeah, I laughed in the first one. Well, I tweeted about this earlier in the week. So, for a sequel to Zoolander, and...
We're setting the bar low here.
And, well, I think it's a factor. If you really didn't like the first one, you're probably not going to like this.
Sure.
If you like the first one, even if you like the first one, like, I think I like this one better than I like the last one.
Oh.
I mean, in both cases, I laughed during it. It just didn't stick with me, you know. But for a sequel to Zoolander, and more specifically for a sequel that's like 17, 18 years old, I think it's like as good as it could possibly be. It's very self-aware of both sort of the ridiculousness of the concepts and the ridiculousness of doing it so many years later. So it does a lot of poking fun at itself.
So when was the first one?
It was like the late 90s, I think. I didn't see it till much later.
Well, whenever it was, it definitely appealed to a 90s sensibility. I mean,
yes.
You ran into 90s kids, people who consider themselves 90s kids, either because that's when they were growing up or that's when they were in high school. Zoolander's a thing.
Yes. Kind of. And part of the conceit of the movie, fairly early on, you get the sort of what's happened in between. And Hansel and Derek Zoolander, the Ben Stiller and the other guy. Oh, the other guy being Owen Wilson. Hey, Trish, food's here. So Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller's character both separately have basically gone into isolation since then. And so a decent part of the movie is the fact that they totally don't relate to the current, and they're sort of still 90s creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got people who, like, remember them as has-beens and all sorts of stuff thrown in with that. Will Ferrell, probably unsurprisingly, steals the whole thing. And has an amazing bit, because at a certain point they actually got several real-life fashion designers to play themselves within this.
Okay.
And due to various circumstances, basically Will Ferrell goes on a rant just skewering them. So he's all about, oh, look, here's Tommy Hilfiger's new spring collection brought to you by White Privilege. And Mark Jacobs says something. He says, "The problem with that, Mark, by Mark Jacobs, is, you know, stuff like, shut up, Valentino." Like, yeah, it was, that part was really fun. And a ridiculous number of cameos and some amazing cameos.
Okay.
Here's what I do right here. Benedict Cumberbatch is in this.
Oh, wow.
In a cameo that I wouldn't tell you, even if you never planned to see it, just on the off chance that someday you see that part. But beyond that, even if I decided I was, I'm not sure I could. It's weird.
Is it?
It's, yeah, it's a pretty amazing cameo from him. And Kiefer Sutherland is a recurring character as himself.
Oh.
And as people got to experience when he had a guest spot on an episode of CSI, once again, people will get to watch Justin Bieber get riddled with bullets.
Riddled with bullets?
Yes, it's like the opening scene. He gets riddled with bullets. And they nail it so good, because he totally gets riddled with bullets, and he's like falling down, and he manages to pull out his phone to take one last selfie. But there's like a good 60-second bit where he's dying, but he has to check, he tries the different filters on the image to pick the one he wants for his last posted selfie. It was very nice that way. And I mean, and it had some dumb, it had some weird fat joke stuff for no good reason. It had some really lousy stuff. Like, Stiller was not the strong part of it, but I laughed a lot. It was pretty fun for that. So if you enjoyed Zoolander at all, it's worth it. That being said, you can totally never see Zoolander or Zoolander 2, and you're fine. That's fine, really. One last thing. Neil deGrasse Tyson cameos in it, in which at one point he says the sentence, "I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, bitch." So that's fun. And the other movie, saw with Trish just last night, and this movie is on Netflix, and I recommend it pretty much to everybody, I think. We had heard about it a long time ago, and it was finally out, so we said, it's called Do I Sound Gay? It's a documentary. And it's about the existence of / the perception of the sort of the gay voice.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a thing? How is that a thing? What does that mean? How does it come about? Do we care? Why? What's the history on it? It was good. We enjoyed it. There's a very important thing to note before you watch it, because we had been under the impression, and talking with people today, I think a lot of people sort of were, that it was going to be much more documentary-ish and much more sort of scientific in a way. And don't get me wrong, they get into some of the science behind and a lot of the studies involved and stuff like that, some of the history. There's a guy who actually describes a pretty cool history of the gay character within film, mm-hmm. and what that means, and that was very interesting. But a lot of this film largely is a sort of one guy's journey thing. The filmmaker is gay, in his 40s, relatively recently broke up with his boyfriend, and has found himself suddenly being aware of and bothered by how gay he sounds. And so he decides he's going to do something about it. And he actually goes to like some speech therapists and things to work on it.
I've heard that part about it, too.
And in the process, you know, learns things. And so, I mean, you do learn a lot, and they talk about it, but it's much more following him on his sort of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Trish was really worried afterwards. She's like, "I really thought it was going to end when he just found a new boyfriend and suddenly didn't care anymore." And I was really worried about that. It does not end that way. I'll tell people that. amazing set of cameos. Tim Gunn's in it. George Takei. David Sedaris. Dan Savage. And then a few other people who I don't really know. Like, there's a newscaster who I guess maybe is famously gay. I don't know. I didn't know. But those ones were, you know, all the big gay heavies are out here. We don't have Nathan Lane, but otherwise we're pretty set. And it was really good, and it was really fun and entertaining, and I liked it. So I think I would recommend that as well. All right, shall we add it up?
Why not?
All right, you've got that over there.
I do have. We're getting started early.
Yeah. No, this is way early for us. Oh, Art, so are you going to go to GammaCon this weekend?
No.
Ah, that's too bad.
No, we can't make it, but are you going to go Friday night?
probably at least for a little while.
Because Dave is playtesting that one game.
Oh, is he? Okay. So I registered, and I haven't registered for any games, because I'm not seeing much that I'm, like, specifically interested in. Mm. And normally there's a thing, like, normally there's a couple of people who I look for who show up and run games, and I try and get in those games, and they're not running games. There's a lot of stuff with Dave's group, but a lot of it is, you know, on demand. That's part of the thing. And, you know, after being so sick and everything, I don't know. Part of me is like, I could just stay home. But I think I've decided at least tomorrow after work I will go down there and see what's going on. And that'll be a start to things.
Yeah,
so. If he's playtesting that, I might see if I can sneak in on that.
We just had other things going on, it turned out, that we couldn't really get out of. But he's doing that Friday night, and I totally recommend you sitting in on it, because it's a very interesting concept, and I'd be interested to know your thoughts on it. So,
what do we got?
Did you see The Martian?
Where?
Thoughts on it.
Is he in the house? Is there a Martian here?
It's a good thing that I didn't talk about this when I saw it, or else we would already have talked about it.
Which usually happens. But I do find this interesting. Okay, but now you're making a liar out of me. Because I'm always like, people ask this stuff, and it's silly, because if we did, we would talk about it.
It's not making a liar.
But in this case, you didn't talk about it.
You would talk about it.
Normally, so would you. Did I even know that you saw it?
No.
Okay, that's weird. I'm going to be honest.
It was just a couple weeks ago.
Were you like trying to hide the fact that you
saw it? No, it was just a few weeks ago.
It seems like it's worth noting. I mean, it was a pretty big deal movie. People were way into it. It's a little odd.
I think it was during a time.
Or did it just not have a particular impact on you?
And I think it was during a time where we weren't, you know, it was like
A lot of makeup ones. And, yeah,
2 weeks and whatever. That's usually, and I forget.
All right, so you've only just recently saw. All right, so you probably have a lot of fresh feeling on it, then.
Oh, except it I wasn't that impressed with it.
I've run into a few people like that. Most people just crazy about it. And then there's a few people who are like, I don't get it. I mean, I get what happened, but I don't really get what was so exciting.
Well,
they're like, there's nothing wrong. Everybody did fine. No, but I don't get why everybody's like, this is the most amazing movie ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the same thing happened. This is the third movie kind of like this in recent memory. You had Gravity, you had Interstellar, and you have this one.
None of which I've seen, none of which I've been interested in seeing.
And people kind of went crazy about all of them. And in some cases, part of the going crazy about it had to do with some aspect of it that someone thought was more realistic than you usually see in certain movies. But especially for Gravity, I couldn't help but be distracted by the things that seemed ridiculous. And
yeah, Gravity really... Everything in Gravity was either dead-on accurate or incredibly inaccurate. They had nothing that was just sort of in between.
Interstellar, kind of similar things. And for me, for someone to get technical stuff right in a film doesn't earn you anything. That's like... You're bringing the film up to where it should
yes.
be. Now show me something interesting.
Not being an asshole.
Yeah, just getting technical things right is like, that's not something to celebrate or give somebody an Oscar for. And this movie was kind of similar, except that, I think the book is probably a lot better. I mean, I've heard people talk about the book... And the technical details in the book, how interesting they are. And a lot of that stuff is lost, completely lost in the film.
From what I've heard, the sort of unusualness of the fact that this book has a lot of those intricate details in it was part of the appeal of the book.
Yeah, yeah, right.
People were like, this is unusual in that there's sort of a lot of realistic hard sci-fi built in here.
Yeah, I might like reading the book, actually. Yeah. But the film was... I mean, a lot of that's lost because you don't really dig into it. You know, the things that he does to survive or whatever, they're interesting, but they're not, for some reason, to me, they weren't, like, impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose what you were supposed to get from the film is, you know, this feeling of the triumph of the human spirit and how, you know, a person with significant scientific knowledge could conceivably, realistically achieve this incredible feat, which is interesting and cool, but something about the way it was presented in the film just didn't, I mean, maybe it's supposed to be inspiring or something,
well,
but it wasn't.
Here's a guess, not having read the book, not having seen the movie, but seen a lot of trailers for the movie and stuff like that. The movie appears to be a very ensemble thing. We spend a lot of time with the people who are going to try and help him and stuff like that. I'm guessing the book does not bother so much with that. So
yeah,
it may be that some of the triumph of the human spirit is lost. And of course, you know the main reason I didn't see it? It's fucking long.
Well,
it's hard to get me to see a movie over 2 hours now.
Yeah, I didn't really notice that part of it. But I mean, most of the characters seemed pretty bland and two-dimensional and not very interesting in terms of how they were written. Not very interesting in how they were acted. Not very interesting in how they related to one another. I would say, you know, in terms of, I like Matt Damon just about everything I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's very good.
But in this, it's like, you know, it's Matt Damon being Matt Damon on Mars and doing sciencey things. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it didn't, I
nothing about it struck me as something that, like, you need a Matt Damon for.
Well, that's part of it, yeah.
And that's the thing. Well, like, when I talked about The Godfather last time, like, and how amazing people were. James Caan, not super amazing, not because he didn't do a good job, but I feel like his part was not that tough.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing. Like, I'm sure Matt Damon did great. I'm sure a lot of other people could have pulled it off, too.
Well,
you know?
And the character, or there just wasn't anything about his portrayal of his character that was fresh or interesting or compelling. Or
you know what finally made me start taking Matt Damon seriously as an actor? Far too many years after it came out, I finally saw The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
And that's mind-blowing performance.
It's a pretty good film. He does a
it
good job
really is. And it's of a film type that I'm not sure I normally like. And they did it so well there. Like, because you need that, like, you have to balance out, this genuinely has to be creepy, but there also has to be sympathy, and it's really hard line to do. You can do a movie about a really horrible guy doing terrible things, or you can do a sympathetic movie about somebody doing something to survive. Like that balance where it's like, yeah, no, this guy's awful and nuts, but I kind of get it. You know, that's a hard position to do.
Here's probably, maybe this is the problem I had with the film is, I basically didn't believe anybody in their roles.
Ouch.
At all.
That's a problem. That's definitely a problem.
I didn't, I mean, not Matt Damon, not anybody. It's like,
well, and they did some
not,
serious glamour casting for this.
I am not buying this person in this role. And they did some things that were...
Is it because Sean Bean stayed alive?
No, they did some things in the film that were not, you know, accurate as to how things would be done in an actual situation that I happened to notice. So, again, you know, just being scientifically accurate means nothing to me. I mean, that's the bare minimum that you ought to do.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a single role that I bought that I believed that these characters were these characters and not just these actors pretending to be these characters.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I like when I came in that William was saying there's not a single role that I bought, and I imagine going into the store and being like, just one role.
Yeah. No, William was just explaining how he doesn't use toilet paper anymore.
It's called Family Something. Holy crap, dude. There's people that don't use toilet paper.
That does not entirely surprise
me.
The fact that whatever their movement is, pardon the pun, involves the word family creeps me out. Like, do they wipe their butts with their children? Or, I mean, how does that work?
They have a bucket of rags. Well, two, because, you know, you got to keep the clean ones separate from the
dirty
ones.
We exist in a world where bidets are a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell?
Family cloth, that's what it's called.
So, it sounds like a cult.
You're welcome,
boy,
Hatters!
Don't steal my pizza.
That makes the term man of the cloth just take on a completely different meaning.
You know, because you don't want to dispose of things. things when you...
maybe we should call the episode Family Cloth, and then people who are looking for that movement will find our site. Kind of like how, for some reason, lots of people want to look up sex hat.
Yeah.
That's a thing. I don't know why.
Do you think people are going to hate me for not being just crazy about this film?
I don't think they're going to hate you any more than usual.
Thank you. I don't hate the movie. It's just I didn't see what the big deal was about it. I don't think my wife was that impressed either, and she really wanted to see it.
I don't know. I believe I remember Coffee and her wife saw it, and they really liked it. Other than that, I haven't talked with a lot of people about it. This did remind me. I should have brought this up earlier. So Nikki Glaser is a comedian of which we are somewhat fond.
Okay.
Producer and I. Our experience with her largely is she's a regular recurring guest on At Midnight. But we've seen some of her other stand-up and stuff, and we like her. She finally got her own TV show on Comedy Central a few weeks ago. It's called Not Safe. And finally watched an episode of it, just like it was on, and so decided to check it out. And didn't know anything about it. It's apparently sort of a talk show thing, but for laughs, that's all about sex. So, highly don't recommend it for you.
Thank you.
But it's pretty funny. But that's not why I'm bringing it. Like, we're not going to record it or anything. We're like, oh, we'll catch it every once in a while, whatever. But in the particular episode that we watched was one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
So, I felt it was worth it. In fact, I saw it without the producer. I made her watch it later because of this. And it was still funny on repeat. So, this particular episode, this particular section, they are discussing, I believe, dirty talk.
Okay.
And lots of jokes involved, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And then she says, as a comedian, I frequently come up with what I think of are good lines in that moment, but they're, like, funny, and so I can't use them because it ruins the mood, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you always want to, and so we came up with this idea. So she and Kyle Kinane, who's another comedian I've talked about here, we saw him live a few weeks ago in Wisconsin, go to a porn shoot, and they sit in a separate room with a monitor and microphones, and the microphones are hooked to earpieces that are in the ears of the two porn stars. Kyle's microphone is hooked to the male porn star's earpiece, and the two porn stars proceed to act out a scene of porn. To fruition, as it, like, a whole thing.
Gotcha.
But Nikki and Kyle tell them what to say in the microphone, and then they say it.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Because there's no mood really to spoil there, right?
Yeah, well, mostly because they could just screw with it, you know? In fact, actually, Kyle opens up with, like, when the guy walks in, and he's like, this is the part of the porn most people fast forward to, so we can fast forward past, so we can say anything we want. But, like, they really do it, and it's amazing. It's just, and they're like, it's so funny that, like, they have to stop a couple times because they're laughing so hard. And to their credit, the porn stars owned it, especially the guy. He really tried to deliver the lines the way he thought they were. Like, it was amazing. It was the most brilliant. I never would have thought of it. It was the most brilliant idea, and it's just hilarious. So, check that out, people. But also, the show just looks pretty cute and whatever. It's funny. I laughed a lot, even at parts that weren't that. So, yes, Ezzy. How are you doing? She does not like that. So here's the thing. I brush Ezzy sometimes.
Okay.
Specifically, if I'm going to take a shower and she's around, she'll hear me open the drawer to take out the brush because I brush out my hair before I get in the shower, get out the tangles and stuff. And she comes up on the bathroom counter and wants to be brushed. So I brush her along the left, along the right. And we've done it long enough that she knows I'm going to alternate. And so when she'll lean in and do this thing where she sort of pushes her own whiskers back to do it. And so I brush her until I get sick of it or she gets distracted and then I stop. And then I get in the shower. Doesn't happen too often because on the weekdays, normally we come back from the gym and Trish feeds them and I go into the shower. Mm-hmm. So she's busy eating. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes it happens. However, this one, Ezzy, has parlayed this into something else now. And Trish gives her brushies when Trish gets out of the shower. Mm-hmm. Like, Ezzy's waiting there for her. But she does it with a different brush and she has a different sort of style. And for some reason, Ezzy responds differently. Ezzy talks a lot while Trish is brushing her. Mm. Not while I'm brushing her. But so Trish will brush her, and she goes, left, on the left side. And she says, right, and does the other side. Left, right, and she does that. And then at a certain point, when she's about done, the last bit is, she goes, head, 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 with the brush. And then she does the up button against the direction of the fur, and goes, up, 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 up. And then she stops. But, and it's cute, whatever, it's their thing, I like that she's making it her own. What I didn't realize is this was just phase one of a plan.
Plan?
Yes, a plan to teach Ezzy right from left.
Okay.
So now, what she does is she has the brush, and she takes it out, and she holds it, and she says, right. And Ezzy has to turn her head to the right, and then she'll brush it. Then she says, left, right. And I don't think Ezzy knows left from right. And I think it's very unlikely. But, you know, confirmational bias being what it is or whatever, when I watch them, it totally seems like she gets it most of the time. It's weird as hell. So, yeah, teaching. And it just reminds me of when I was younger and I tried to teach Twiglet to read. Mm. That went poorly.
Did it?
Because the first thing I had to do was explain the significance of books.
Sure, yeah.
And that was as far as I got. So now, he still can't read, but he likes to chew on books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I feel like that made things worse. Mm. So
I suppose it did, yeah.
Yeah. All right, give me that. I'll draw a thing.
You seem reluctant.
Yeah, I'm always worried it's going to, like, bite my finger off or something, yeah. You know? Whoa, this is a long one.
Okay.
I don't know that we've had this person before. Neuroduck.
Neuroduck?
Yes. As in neurological, like neuro duck.
No, I don't think we have.
Dear Hat, if you were given the option of space or time travel, which would you choose? The option of where and when you were going would not be yours. That gets freaky there. So the question is, do you want to go somewhere random or somewhen random? Can I stay home? All right, but no, I'm going to make you do this because it's boring otherwise. Well, gun to your head. Got to pick
somewhere,
one.
Somewhere, obviously.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
Because there's too many somewhens. I mean, you could end up in dinosaur times.
Right?
You could end up, but somewhere, it's just going to be a now, you'll just probably end up, well, unless anywhere in the universe is where the somewhere is. I mean, is it restricted to Earth?
Yeah, statistically speaking, then we're probably in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, we're probably screwed either way.
Oh, no, 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 no.
All right, well, let's say it's the whole universe and it's all time. Mm.
Then I really don't think it matters.
Yeah.
I think we just die. But let's say it's the surface of the Earth.
Okay.
And the length of time that Homo sapiens have been around up to, well, I don't know, guys, we got to go in the future too. Okay, let's say then we'll say the length of time during which Homo sapiens exist on the Earth,
the whole thing.
Yes. But we don't know, that could only be like 3 more years. We don't even know.
Well, that's a tough one.
I still don't, I feel like there's too much, I mean, it just feels like such a gamble.
Yeah, it would still be probably...
I feel like the odds are in my favor that I could eventually make my way back to civilization something.
Right.
If it's where. If it's when, who the fuck knows?
But
you know?
It's just so... But if you know there are going to be people there...
Well, yeah.
It's so interesting, past or future, how interesting it would be.
You know there will be people somewhere on the planet.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, that's the thing. Technically speaking, the best case scenario is way better in the time travel one. But the worst case scenario is also way worse than the time travel one. So it just it's a bigger gamble for bigger odds all around.
Going back to the original question, it's a basically which way would you rather die kind of question.
Yeah.
But if you pick where,
dumb
are you still
ways
on Earth?
To die. In this,
time.
In the one I just described.
No, I mean, if the choice is you can be transported anywhere or any time, the any time one is you're still going to be where you're at.
Oh, yeah, I suppose technically, because okay. We're not moving in space.
So that would seem to be...
And the anywhere would mean right now, today, just somewhere else on the planet.
Or in the universe.
Yeah.
In that case, it seems like the anytime thing would be safer, because at least you're going to be somewhere.
If you're covering the whole universe, I think the anytime is better.
Because, yeah.
Okay.
Although it couldn't work, because Earth's not here all the whole time. Well, I suppose that point in space that the Earth occupies is...
Yeah. Let's do this. We'll do we'll do the nice version. All right. In both cases, you are guaranteed that where or when you will end up will not immediately kill you.
Not immediately kill you.
Yes.
Will it kill you within 3 seconds because you're in space?
No.
3 minutes
no.
Because you're in space? You'll starve to death?
In the case of going anywhere,
mm-hmm.
You'll be returned back to where you started after, like, say, an hour.
Okay.
And in the case of any when, you will be returned back to your own time after an hour of your subjective time.
Mm.
And in both cases, you are guaranteed to go somewhere that the environment does not automatically, won't kill you that way. Like, you could still fall off a cliff or something like that.
Or shoot yourself.
But, like,
head.
Just like the temperature or air or whatever won't kill you. And I'll even throw in any weird microorganisms you might catch will be gone when you come back.
Okay. So you're guaranteed some measure of safety.
Yes.
And return.
Yes. It's just a visit.
Huh. Well, again, that if you're talking about all of time and the whole universe, it's kind of six of one and a half dozen of the other. Because if you end up... I suppose.
I think I go with the when at that point. I think I go with time, just because it seems more interesting.
Well,
there's some cool places on the planet, but I feel
on the surface it does.
I'm not gonna go someplace and be like, I didn't even know this existed.
On the surface it does, but for all the time the universe has existed, most of that time. Earth didn't.
Yeah, no, if we do the whole of time and we do the whole of the universe, then it's almost a meaningless question.
I guess.
Because we have no idea, like, do you want a random thing to happen or do you want a different random thing to happen? Is about as far as you get.
I suppose.
And the only thing we can promise you is those two random things will be different from each other.
Yeah, from each other. I don't know.
I feel like that doesn't work. But yeah, if we're sticking within relative home turf, the planet, the lifespan of humanity, yeah, the time one becomes interesting if the safety is no longer an issue.
Because yeah, there are a lot, I mean, the past especially.
The past especially because you don't know the past, because you don't know the future. The future could have some really amazing shit in it.
I suppose, but...
Probably not. I mean, we're probably going to die off in a couple of years.
I'm less interested in the future than the past. I suppose because I want to maintain the illusion in my head that it's something that I can still have something, you know, I still have some way of making it other than what it's going to be. You follow what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
if I go into the future... Then no matter what the rules of time travel, the rules of the time-space continuum actually are, it creates the illusion that these things are going to happen no matter what I do. Or, you know, or already what I've done is going to play a part in this happening, and so now that doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
Whereas if I don't go into the future at all, I don't have anything really challenging the illusion, if that's what it is, that the future doesn't exist yet.
And if you go into the past, you don't have any perception of you're going to change things and screw up your present?
Well, I mean, that's the biggest reason I wouldn't go into the past, but since this is a hypothetical question and I'm assuming we're adding any kind of...
We're going to maintain the safety of the timeline.
Yeah. That I can at least see it.
Kurtwood Smith will destroy entire planets. It's weird that that's what I remember. The shitty, shitty time police in Star Trek had that ship in Voyager that was captained by Kurtwood Smith.
Although, if I
do, man's in everything.
If I do go back in time, then it's already happened. I mean, the past where I go back in time has already happened, and so whatever changes, I've already changed.
That's always my favorite version of time travel, is the one where it's all set already, but I mean, you still have control. So, like, if you go into the future and learn things and come back here and change stuff, that's literally how the timeline was always going to go.
Or
if you go in the past and change stuff, well, the history you know is the changed version that happened because you went into the past.
Right. Because it happened before you were born, so...
And if somebody tells you you went into the past and did stuff, you still have the ability to not do it, but if you didn't do it, then actually the timeline back there is you not doing it. Like, it's all done, and you just don't... I mean, you make your choices, but the universe already sort of knows what happened.
Yeah.
I've always liked that version. I also like that version of God, because that's the only one that makes sense to me. I'm like, God can't interfere, or it changes things, or... God knows all, and so he specifically interferes in ways that he already knows what the outcome's going to be. And that's what the timeline looks like, you know? And I feel like Gargoyles did that, which is why they're one of my favorite time travels.
Yes, you've often said that.
Yep, I like that one. The others are just too hard to work with. They get too wibbly-wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
So you either make goddamn Primer... Or you make goddamn Doctor Who, where we're just like, oh, time travel, hit, you know, like, like Doctor Who is just fantasy, and occasionally the version of magic we explain things with is time travel.
Yeah.
Like, it contradicts itself all over the place. It glosses over things, which is fine. I mean, that's its point.
Yeah, that's its deal.
But that's, I love Doctor Who. Doctor Who is not good time travel. And meanwhile, Primer. Just can kiss my ass. And for those few of you, and actually, I suppose the odds of Primer fans being amongst our listeners is pretty high.
I don't really know anything about Primer myself.
Sorry that you like a dumb movie. but you know, you do you, so enjoy it. And maybe, in the future, I like it. So let me go get into a refrigerator box in a storage unit for a little while. And then I won't hate it. I don't know.
Oh, that's Primer? That's
Yeah.
I take it back. I have seen that.
And?
It was all right. I mean, I didn't hate it.
All right.
Did you think it was terrible? Did you think the time travel in it was dumb?
I think it was... Oh, how do I even put it? I think it was damn near unintelligible.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to go so far as to say as it was unintelligible, but it was so dense and complicated in the nature of its exposition that it kind of ceased to be a narrative for me.
Yeah, I'm like,
I feel like now I'm just reading the instruction manual for a time machine. I'm not going to say isn't interesting, but...
I can totally see where you're coming from on that. I'm not a big fan of time travel anything in the first place. I mean, I'll watch it, and it's a genre of speculative fiction, so, you know, it's one of those things that if you're a fan of speculative fiction, you're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's not my first choice of... Usually because I find it not very plausible, not particularly interesting. I mean, I don't personally think it's anything that we're ever going to be able to do.
Have we talked about the Feng Shui role-playing game?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
It has time travel. And full disclosure, I haven't actually played it. but it has time travel, but its version of time travel is there are basically four periods of time that you can jump between, and they're all continuing to move at regular time rates. So, like, I'm here, and I go back to, it's like the 1940s or whatever, and I spend 3 hours there, and then I come back here, 3 hours will have passed here.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much, it allows you to fix a lot of the contradiction things, so you can have the fun of time travel without having to deal with all the bullshit going on there. So I think that
maybe that's helps. That's the problem is I don't really get the fun of time travel, honestly. I mean, of course, I always think about how cool it would be to see this, that, or the other thing. But usually in a time travel narrative, it's not really about that. It's about
all what of the, would you do if you
the,
could?
And the problems with it and the paradoxes and all that stuff. And that just doesn't interest me.
And it's hard to get away from those because if they're not talking about those, you're like, well, this doesn't make any sense because all this would be screwed up. And like, the paradoxes inherent within time travel are so obvious that you can't ignore them when you're talking time travel, but then you have to spend all your time on them and it's not that interesting.
That's exactly
so
right.
Either way, you're screwed. Because there are a lot of things that do very simple time travel, and I can usually forgive it, but I can't help but sit here and go, yeah, that's dumb.
Well, but also, if you do spend all your time addressing the paradoxes and stuff, there's no way to resolve it.
For
all the time you spend focusing on it and dealing with it, you don't come up with anything interesting or compelling anyway. So you've wasted all that time and squandered all that narrative. So yeah, it's like a no-win situation. Like time travel itself, it's a no-win situation to
like
tell a time travel
the
story.
The thing in Futurama where they accidentally destroyed the universe and Al Gore was really mad about it.
Oh, I'm sure he was, yeah.
And he's like, and somebody's like, where are we? He's like, well, I'll tell you where we're not. The universe. Yeah, it was the vice presidential rangers, I believe. Because the vice president is in charge of maintaining the time stream.
Oh.
And they said, I thought he cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate. It's like, yes. And he's in charge of maintaining the time. Read your constitution. And his rangers were, it was Nichelle Nichols and Gary Gygax, and I forget who else, that go with him to maintain the time stream. It was I don't even know what you call it. Futurama occasionally did what-if episodes, where they do, like, three short things, kind of like a Halloween thing for Simpsons, but it wasn't holiday-based. They would come up with some excuse to basically do a what-if scenario. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was the professor invented a device that would show you an image of what it looked like and stuff like that. And this was one of those. I forget what it was about exactly, but I'll tell you where we're not. The universe. All right, we got time for one more if we hurry.
If we hurry?
Given it's us, yeah, we got about 12 minutes, so.
Azure Talon.
Oh, that guy.
Hat and Hatters.
Although we are PlayStation Network friends. So.
He'll
probably be at Gamacon.
We haven't heard from Azure Talon for a while. Hat and Hatters, did you miss me? Azure Talon.
Specifically, he's asking the hat and our listeners, so y'all can answer.
Yep.
I'm not going to answer, because my mama taught me that if you can't say something nice about Azure Talon... Which was weird, because as a kid, I was like, who's Azure Talon? She's like, you'll see. I think my mom was a time
traveler. Yeah.
If you can't say something nice about Azure Talon, give him cancer.
And you've already done that. So.
Yeah, it didn't take, though. I believe he's like 3 years in remission or something.
You're a terrible person. Let's draw something else.
I am.
You said we had 12 minutes.
No.
That's not a 12-minute question.
It is good, though. Did you miss Azure Talon? I kind of missed Azure Talon.
Of course I do.
Because it doesn't feel right when I pick on other people.
Although you do try.
Ezzy, did you miss Azure Talon? Yeah, she says yes.
I hope he's listening still.
We need more questions, people. Write in, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Yeah, I have no idea when he submitted that, so. Coffee. Wow. All right. You're going to have to take a lot in here. So
okay.
Get ready for this.
I'm ready.
Describe a household.
Yes.
With goats in pajamas and min pigs, I assume mini pigs, in pajamas.
Describe it?
Describe a household with goats in pajamas and mini pigs in pajamas. Go ahead.
Describe it. Well, I think it would be very messy. And probably very smelly. And the goats would probably, be chewing on everything and eating everything.
Maybe on the pigs, chewing on the pigs.
Or maybe the pajamas that the pigs are wearing.
Is there an impact of them being in pajamas? Like, does that have an impact on the whole process at all?
Well,
is there a difference between a household with goats and mini pigs versus a house with goats and pajamas and mini pigs and pajamas?
If I had to guess, I would say the person who wrote the question is anticipating that there would be something particularly adorable and cute about this whole thing. With the pajamas, like, that makes it cuter.
Yeah.
And more adorable. Which
I think by definition.
Well, I don't understand that. I'm just guessing based on past experience and how people talk about these things.
William doesn't understand pajamas.
I don't understand animals in clothes at all, really.
You remember the baby goats in pajamas video I made you watch?
Yes.
Possibly one of the most marvelous things about it is they're clearly specially made for the baby goats, which means they're actually built in such a way that all the, like, goat business is just out there. So the baby goats can be in the pajamas and can still, like, poop and whatever, and it doesn't mess up the pajamas. So I thought that was pretty ingenious. I thought that was very smart of them. Because I was like, yeah, you put baby goat in pajamas, it's fun for a little while, and then
I think
stuff happens.
I think the description is probably supposed to give, you know, be a little bit about how cute and adorable it is, but I don't get that because,
well,
when I see animals in clothes, I see something that, to me,
you assume
is,
the animal was a thief and stole them from a little person.
No, it seems like something's happening that shouldn't be happening, and that maybe the animal itself doesn't really enjoy very much. I mean, of course, I don't know.
That is a concern I have with some of these things. They have to look really happy. I was just telling just the other day, so, you know, we have our cats. Mm-hmm. We love our cats.
Mm-hmm.
And our cats seem to like us. And we anthropomorphize the hell out of our cats.
As people do with their
on
pets.
A regular basis. Yeah.
Part of the fun of having a pet.
And they're part of the family and all that jazz. Every once in a while, I'll be, like, looking at one of them, and it just suddenly, like, sinks in that this is, like, a random animal that lives in our house. I'm like, that's weird. I mean, and not that that's a bad thing, but I'm like, I don't think of them that way. I mean, let's be honest, and this is the thing I think comes with a lot of pets if you're a serious pet owner. You think of them as kids. You think of them as your children. Maybe not even entirely consciously, but that's the thing. They're the little kids that live in the house.
Okay.
But every once in a while, I'm like, no, that's just a random animal. And, I mean, we get along, and but a little odd. I mean, I wonder what's going through her head. Like, and she just, like, hangs out, and this is her life. Like, I don't know, it seems weird to me. Okay, just for the sake of making sure we do answer this, I'm going to describe a household with goats and pajamas.
Go ahead, knock yourself out. I'm bad at things like that, of course.
William,
everybody knows. Yes.
There's this house.
Yeah.
In the house.
Mm-hmm.
Are goats.
Is it a person house, or is it like a hen house, or a goat house, or a pig house? Because you know those are kind of specific things.
It's a household, so I'm going to say it's a person house.
It's a person house. Like the house we're in, for example.
Yes.
Okay.
And there are goats.
There's goats in there.
Those goats?
That's probably not a good place for goats, but...
Those goats are in pajamas.
They're wearing pajamas.
Yes.
Hmm.
And there are also miniature pigs there.
Miniature ones. Not piglets.
No, like the pot belly, like
adult,
the Vietnamese.
But small.
Yeah.
Mm.
They.
Pigs.
Also are in pajamas.
But not goat pajamas.
I'm not willing to commit to
that. All right, well, because I don't think the goat pajamas would fit the pigs very well. Not the small. Not any pigs, actually, now that I think about it. Okay, so there's the house. Is there anything else in the house? Or is it just the goats and the pigs and the pajamas?
Not that I'm telling you. I mean.
Oh, you're just describing the house.
Yeah, I've described, yeah. It didn't specify a level of detail.
No, it didn't.
So.
And how do you feel about this house with the pigs and the goats in pajamas? When you walk into the house, does it make you go, oh, or, you know, that's what people do. I don't know what that means, really, but.
To be fair, any time I come into a house, I go, oh.
Oh, okay. Doesn't matter if there's goats in pajamas in there?
No. I did it in my own house.
What if the goats in pajamas are standing on top of the pigs in pajamas? Because goats do that. Stand on top of things.
That would be pretty cute. If I'm honest, that'd be pretty cute.
Well.
And ideally, we could expand and be like, pig, goat, pig, goat. Ooh, I think I just invented a new sandwich.
Mm. Pork and, wait.
And goat.
You don't eat goat.
I've eaten goat.
You have?
Yeah.
When?
One of the Indian restaurants in town.
Has goat?
Yeah. Well, actually, a few places in town have goat.
What's goat meat called? It's not just called goat.
No, it actually is.
Really?
Just goat.
It's like
chicken. Goat.
Because, you know, pig is called pork. And
yes, and sheep is called mutton.
And sheep
lamb
is called
mutton? Lamb, though.
That's
I think we've actually discussed
lamb.
This, like how they decide that kind of thing.
Lamb is called lamb, you're right.
Turtle's called turtle.
But deer is called venison.
Do you know that the Japanese think that rabbits are birds?
Are birds?
Yes.
No.
They don't really, but here's the thing. In several Asian countries, including Japan, they have a linguistic thing where when you're counting things, depending on what kind of thing it is, you have a certain name, word you would put. So like if you're counting animals, it'd be one, something, two, something. And it's not animal. The word's not animals. It's a different word that is specific to when you count animals. You say one, two,
okay.
That kind of thing. And they have one for birds. And when counting rabbits, you use the same one you use for counting birds. And supposedly this goes back to a particular emperor during a time when there was, for whatever reason, a big push to not eat red meat in Japan. And the emperor still wanted to eat some, so he decreed that rabbits were a kind of bird. And they don't believe that now, of course. They didn't really believe it then either. But the holdover, the linguistic holdover is there.
In their counting.
Yes.
I see.
Just learned that the other day. All right, we're about out of time.
You're just
so
a fount of
useless information.
Knowledge, yeah.
I have so much. Nothing worthwhile is in there, but a lot of stuff that isn't, including, like, most of The Simpsons. Anyway. You guys should go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and say things, and we'll say things back. Also, still let us know. We're experimenting with the sound. I am confident, just based on what I'm seeing here, that the sound of this episode is quite different. Tell us if it's a good different or a bad different, or what, so that we can adjust, because I'm not listening to it. Also follow us or like us on Facebook. Also, please keep writing into themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and listen next week. And what else should they do?
That's all I can think
look
of.
For the union label. Da, 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 da. And lie around. And if you ask us to do it. Wait, I just went into the pirates who don't do anything instead. No, I was not attempting to make any comparison or commentary here. The tune was just similar, and I know that one a lot better. You look like Captain Crunch. You're making me hungry.
yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.